Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q3 FY22 earnings conference call of Tata Chemicals Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Gavin Desa from CDR India. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Steven. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us on Tata Chemicals Q3 and nine-month FY22 earnings conference call. We have with us today Mr. R. Mukundan, the Managing Director and CEO, Mr. Zarir Langrana, Executive Director, and Mr. Nandakumar Tirumalai, the Chief Financial Officer. Before we begin, I would like to mention that some of the statements made in today's discussions may be forward-looking in nature and may involve risks and uncertainties. I now invite Mr. Mukundan to begin proceedings of the call. Over to you.
Thank you, Gavin, and good morning and welcome to everyone to the quarterly earnings call. I'm joined by my colleagues, Mr. Zarir Langrana, Executive Director, and our CFO, Mr. Nandakumar Tirumalai, for today's call. I just will highlight some operational issues and strategic direction, after which Mr. Nandakumar will take us through the financial performance for the quarter. As such, this quarter was relatively good compared to the challenges we faced during the quarter. This has been possible because of the revenue and margin momentum we've seen in our soda ash business. As we mentioned previously, the demand-supply dynamics for soda ash has turned favorable and is likely to remain favorable for certain amount of time. I would say a couple of more years, and if we define it like this, it'll be medium term. Let me move on to individual segments within soda ash. Indian business has delivered performance and profitability. As you know, in three of our sites, we have taken maintenance shutdown, which is in India, U.K., and so India, USA, and in Kenya. There were a bit of a low volume this quarter, but we've seen very strong demand, and prices have remained firm during the quarter, and we expect them to remain in a similar zone going forward too. On the international business, again, TCNA has had growth of domestic and growth in export, more importantly, because there's been bounce back of underlying demand. There again, the shutdown had meant that if you look at the trailing quarter, which is Q2 to Q3, we lost some volume. Also because maintenance shutdown was taken, it has increased our fixed costs a little bit in both India and in U.S. Magadi has also performed well, and sequentially also we've seen improvement in operational performance. As far as U.K. is concerned, I think this quarter, Mr. Nandakumar will explain some of the elements of the carbon capture unit as well as the hedging of CO2 carbon, buying carbon in the market to hedge the future have all come in and helped us. I think that strategy will play out so that we are well protected from any variations or any sudden spikes in the marketplace. We continue to have a very strong risk mitigation strategy, not just on energy, input energy, but also now on carbon market. As far as salt is concerned, it continues to be strong and steady, both in India and U.K. Bicarb business, again, I think India and U.K. have done well. In terms of nutrition, nutraceuticals and HCS, these our focus, as I maintained, is to get to a positive EBITDA level, which is what we are working to, and we're working to secure customer acceptance and ramping of our utilization. Rallis also has declared its numbers. It's both domestic and international have delivered healthy growth in revenue. Seed business had some stress. Company is investing for growth and is working on backward integration for some of the products which should help it in its supply chain and margin. As far as the strategy of Tata Chemicals standalone itself is concerned, our focus remains to expand capacity in our core segments of soda ash, salt, and bicarbonate, and also move the needle in terms of the HCS and Nutra. On HCS, we may be accelerating the investment because we're seeing a strong demand pull from our customers. With this, I'd like to state that our strategy of focusing on core business, ensuring the supply dynamics are delivered well on the ground, and we support the demand recovery with strong supply chain performance. And also mitigating some of the risks which we had faced in terms of the input costs have been done well. Also wanted to highlight that we now have a good understanding of the market supply and supply situation on the input side. And we do strongly believe that the company will be able to manage the stresses which had come on the input cost side in quarter two. We have overcome them in quarter three, and going forward in quarter four, with the prices having been renegotiated across customers, you would see the margins also reflect the resilience which we have built in terms of the input cost management vis-à-vis the pressures which are coming from the external market. With this, I would now hand over the floor to Mr. Nandakumar to take us through the financial performance.
Thank you, Mukundan, and good morning to all. I just walk you through the performance for Q3. Our consolidated revenues for the quarter was at 3142 crores, 21% more than previous year, and PAT at 340 crores, almost 70% more than last year. This is mainly due to the growth in soda ash and bicarb volumes, notably in US, UK and Kenya, and the impact of price increases in India and other geographies. Coming to India now, the revenue was at 931 crores, up 15% over previous year. The EBITDA margin was at 26%, an increase of 3%. The PBT has gone up from 148 crores to 214 crores, a 45% jump compared to last year's Q3. The capex is on track. Coming to US, the volumes rebounded from previous year and revenue at 891 crores is up 20% and PBT is at 37 crores. The US volumes remain strong with growth in domestic and export market as compared to previous year. Export volume mix is higher than previous year. Export pricing is seeing recovery, but domestic prices remain stable. Coming to UK, revenue at 551 crores is up 47% and PBT is at 13 crores compared to a 2 crores profit last year. UK soda ash sales volumes remain stable with higher sales price. Margins were higher for the quarter due to higher sales price despite rising input costs including coke, ammonia, packaging cost. And as Mukund mentioned, we also started hedging our carbon in UK. The markets opened up in the UK ETS in the month of May or June, and the counterparty were able to offer us the hedging from October 1st. So as of now, we are hedging all our carbon exposures in UK there. Coming to Kenya, revenue is at 132 crores, up 24%, EBIT at 18 crores, almost same as last year. Kenya is performing well with improved sales volumes and higher sales price. Coming to Rallis, revenue at 628 crores, EBIT at 48 crores. Revenue has been steady with growth coming from domestic crop care and international business, and margins were impacted due to the higher raw materials and fixed cost. Our profits from a JV has been good mainly because of the joint venture in Morocco we had. See the JV line in the SEBI, it's a substantial jump compared last year. Our capex spend was at 1040 crores for 9 months as compared to 895 crores last year. Our net debt at 4120 crores, 200 crores more than March. I now hand over the floor to Gavin for the Q&A.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Sumant Kumar from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi everyone. So my question is regarding PLI and the reference of the Tata Motors call. When the participant asked why did the Tata Group not participated in the PLI for advanced chemistry sales, so they were over the reply was they found that risk return equation was not working out for us. So what's your view on that? Are the plan is on, or we are not going to going for the battery cell manufacturing? Can you talk about that?
So I maintain the same thing which we have been maintaining, that if there is anything specific to discuss or present to shareholders, we'll do at that point of time. As of now, there's nothing specific beyond what has been stated up till now.
Okay, so for the time being, we are not thinking of if there will be any progress, you will intimate. Still, we are going to work on that, or we are having a plan to enter into the business or not?
Sorry, I think there was some vibration. Yeah. So I think your comment is valid that I think if there is any change in the position, any change, anything substantial to be informed, we will do at that point of time.
Okay. Okay. Now, talking about the financial side, we have seen an interest cost in this quarter was lower despite the gross debt is at the similar level. So can you comment on that? What was the key reason for that?
I think that, see, if you look at, we did some refinancing and repricing of a lot of loans in the U.S., and we've been able to refinance the bulk of the loans, which were at L+4% to L+1.5% during the last 4-5 months' time. That's why the interest cost is lower compared to last year's Q3.
Okay. Now, talking about overall U.S. business, we have seen margin pressure in that. Again, if you consider the 27 crore insurance claim we have in the base quarter, and when we adjust in the base quarter, despite of that, we have a margin pressure in the U.S. business. And the way export business is growing and the price is going to come up, what kind of margin profile we can look for the coming quarter? And the way you see the input cost pressure is going to subside in the coming quarter?
So broadly, as a principle, export realizations are lower than domestic realization. And as you know, the domestic volume never went down in the U.S. substantially, so they've been able to maintain the volume. The growth is coming primarily of export volume, which has a lower realization and a slightly lower margin structure. Of course, the full benefit of renegotiated export prices and all will come in Q4, which should improve the margins further. But the mix impact will continue till it becomes a steady state number equal to what the mix impact was the steady year before pandemic. That is all I would say.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rohit Nagraj from Emkay Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. So the first question is, sometimes during the end of 2020, Solvay had indicated that they would be adding soda ash and bicarb capacity of about 1.4 million tons by 2022. This will be probably a brownfield expansion. Any further update on this, given that we have exposure across different continents? Thank you.
So I will not comment specifically about any company because it is unfair other than our own company, but I can give you a general comment on the market. Generally, our analysis shows market is about 3 million tons short as we speak, and this demand-supply tightness of about 3 million tons is going to persist for at least till 2025-26, broadly, give or take 6 months here or there.
Right. Got it, sir. So the second question is on the domestic market. So domestic market, how has been the pricing environment during the last couple of months, and what will be the currently ruling prices in the domestic market? Thank you.
See, I just want to say the point about pricing environment is fundamentally driven off the availability or lack of availability as it stands today. So the material is not available. We are only giving to our consistent buyers or reliable buyers, buyers who have been with whom we've had a long relationship, and we have been very fair to people who have stood by us to continue to stand by them. The basic issue is like this, that on the many input side, there has been a big severe impact on both availability and cost on the input side. Firstly, on the salt, because of heavy rainfall in Kutch and extended rainfall in Kutch, salt availability has sharply come down. The salt prices, input salt prices have sharply gone up. More than the prices, I think availability itself is something which was a big problem in the Q3. It may improve towards Q4 as the harvesting season starts on salt, but it is running on a very, very thin ice. The second issue has been on coal. If you look at the Indian plant, especially our plant, India plant is using Indonesian coal. Indonesian government had put an export ban on coal, and it had created severe issues in terms of availability for domestic market. So both on input cost as well as input availability, as well as the other key element is the coking coal and anthracite availability, which is imported from South Africa. There were shipping problems, there were supply chain problems. All this had led to a very, very tight situation on the input side, which then led to a very tight situation on the output side, which is easing a bit, but the market conditions are fairly strong, and we see this to be continuing, and the prices to be firming up, and I think on the input side there could be some easing of pressure, which we are seeing, but we need to be extremely careful and cautious. What we've done as far as Tata Chemicals is concerned is to reduce the level of risk by stocking up, which has led to some in the working capital. If you see, there is a increase in working capital which is there. Bulk of it is on the input side, where we have to increase the stock level so that we can be safe and sure.
Got it, sir. Thank you so much for all the answers and best of luck.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Tejas Sheth from Nippon India AMC. Please go ahead.
Yeah. On the renewables of the US business side, of the annual contracts, what is the uptick we have taken in this January?
Yeah, I think Zari would like to answer that.
So our US exports, as you're probably aware, happens through ANZAC. So in general, in most markets, what we are hearing, export markets, we see into Southeast Asia and Latin America, there's been really based on the supply dynamics that Mukund spoke about, a significant uptick in prices on a CFR basis, which is to be balanced also with an increase in freight costs. So we are probably seeing an increase from what we hear in those markets of anywhere between $30 to $40 a ton.
Okay. And on the battery side, lot of traction at the global level is happening on sodium ion batteries as a alternative to lithium ion. Are we looking at that space? And secondly, if that traction happens, you see us benefiting on the soda ash business side?
Really, I think sodium batteries depend on sodium vanadium phosphate as of now. So while the work on the lab will be, our labs continue to work, I think there are still, I would say, on the sodium side, challenges related to, the density of energy and the number of cycles it can operate. These need to get fixed. So it is still in a development stage, and I would not want to hazard anything in terms of sodium demand coming off that. But work is on. If you look at the basic reason why the work is being pushed is because, as you know, sodium is more easily available than the other competing materials. I think you should also not forget the power of hydrogen. So I think both hydrogen and sodium will compete with lithium. So I can say they are at lab stage. That's about it. Nothing more.
Okay. So we are investing towards that side of the development.
No, I think I'm only addressing the question. Do you see a demand uptick for sodium?
Okay. No, so my first part of the question was, are we looking to invest in that side?
See, I think at the lab level, we do continue to work on these, because these are issues of electrochemistry which our team is familiar with. We also work with some external labs. So I think we do continue to work on them, and it is an effort which we will not give up. But to your second order question, does it lead to any change in demand for any of the products we make? I think that is a little bit too early to speak right now.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhijit Akella from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much. Just a couple of questions. First one on the US renegotiations, which Mr. Langrana just touched upon kindly. So exports, as you said, you know, you've seen about a $30 to $40 uptake. Could you also characterize the kind of increase you're seeing in the domestic side of the business?
I think, Abhijit, the way you should look at domestic is going to be marginal, $1 or $2 or $3 at best, not more. I think the real change in color of the EBITDA earnings of that business are going to come from export volumes going back to normal, and also export pricing going up by a range which Jaleel gave. I think I would peg it net of freight at about $40 you can take, and then you can work off that number.
Okay, so the reason there's no increase in the domestic business is because we have multi-year contracts with those customers, or you know, how is that?
Yeah, the issue on domestic is that you see gas prices have gone up, and also freight, local freight rates have gone up. So I think that is not moving the needle much. The needle is moving on the export side. I really think if you really look at the margin expansion on an overall basis, GC expansion on an overall basis for the US business, it is going to come off exports only.
Okay, understood. Second, I just wanted to check if it might be possible to share the average realizations for the quarter for the India products, soda ash, salt and bicarb.
Sorry, but I think we don't share the product by the EBITDA, Abhijit. We only give at the segment level.
Yeah. Realization I was asking for.
No, we don't share that to anyone.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Fine. And the last quick thing, just wanted to clarify. Mr. Mukundan said the market is 3 million tons short right now, and you see that continuing till 2025-26. Did I catch you correctly, Mark?
Yeah, very well. You want to highlight
so
the pricing?
So, Abhijit, let me first address your question broadly on domestic pricing. This was a question raised by somebody else earlier as well. There's been a steady uptick in our list prices domestic. As we speak, the pricing is in the range of about 31,000 per ton on an ex-works basis, list price. Obviously, different customers will be at different price levels and different geographies will be at different price levels, but that should give you an idea of the way that domestic prices have moved up. Your second question was, sorry, on the global demand supply gap. As Mukund mentioned, it's in the region we estimate of about 3 million tons today. And it's a number that we believe will continue to hold for the next 3 or 4 years. Just given the fact that there does not seem to be any substantial greenfield or brownfield capacities coming up in any of the geographies in the next 2-3 years. And of course, demand will continue to increase.
Okay, sir. Got it. That's really helpful. Thank you so much, and I'll come back in the queue for more.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of S. Ramesh from Nirmal Bang. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, and thank you very much. So first, to understand the UK performance has come in as a really positive surprise, and congratulations on that. So can we get a sense in terms of how you managed to increase realizations, because UK is supposed to be 100% contract and we are expecting the price revisions from January. So how did you manage to get higher realizations there, and is there any one-off, or is the kind of EBITDA margin of reported in third quarter likely to sustain for the next few quarters in the UK business?
Yeah, so I think I'll ask Zareel also to add color, but I think we've had a very difficult exercise done during this quarter because of challenges faced. I think and we must thank our customers for supporting us through this difficult quarter by some of them accepting mid-year contract corrections because of the sharp increase in gas price as well as the carbon cost. I think customers have stepped up, and they have in fact committed that this being a very unusual increase, which we had to take a hit of 70 odd crores last quarter, I think they stepped in and sort of corrected it, and I think we can only thank our customers for. But these were very difficult discussions, but I just want to put on the table that we've reached a fair conclusion of the ability and stability of supplies during the quarter. The real stable number will be from quarter four. But quarter three is a reflection of the support extended by customers to ensure that we don't have a heavy impact of the sharp increase which we had faced in quarter two.
So, in terms of the UK contracts renewal going forward from January, would it also have the same impact of this $30 to $40 excluding freight that we discussed for the US?
I think customers have settled at a fair number, and it is fair to assume that the pressure which we had seen in Q2 will not continue. It is going to abate, and I think that's the way it is. And customers have also accepted beyond certain cutoffs of pass-through for both carbon and for energy. So I think that sort of protects us. That's all I would add at this point of time.
Okay, just on the demand and supply, when you talk about this shortfall of 3 million tons, can we get some number in terms of what is the current available capacity and what is the consumption in million tons, just to get those numbers? Because the global capacity as per data is 71 million. So I just want to get the exact number in the context of what we are discussing as a shortfall.
Yeah, so nameplate capacity is about 71. You're completely right in that respect. We believe that the actual operational capacity and demand is probably maxed out today at about 61, 62, which means it's gone back to its pre-pandemic levels. Yeah. And that's really where the shortage is coming, because demand is bounced back, continues to grow at 1.5-2% globally. That's the number you can take. There's no substantial expansions happening. All of the plants that we are aware of are operating at capacity. There's also been some reduction in capacity in China. I think as we entered the new year, almost 1 million tons permanently went off the market in China. So I think the focus of suppliers and producers today is really to make sure that their customers are kept serviced. And our focus is really on that, to make sure, as Mukund said, that we continue to service customers that have been with us for many years, and we make sure that their plants don't suffer.
So if I understand you correctly, then how much of this gap we have in terms of available capacity as on day and the installed capacity is likely to come back, given that the margins are very strong? So the 10 million tons of extra capacity which is not available now, can some of that come back in the next
month? So let me take that. I think the issue is that there could be at best, and see, our figures were about 3.8 shortfall. And the reason I mentioned 3 is that, let's say, about 1 million tons is something which people could debottleneck and bring on stream. That still leaves about 3 million tons, which has a time lag of execution, which is nothing less than 24 to 36 months, even if people were to start putting steel and cement on the ground. So that's where we are really, and that is the reason why this tightness is likely to continue. As Zarir has also mentioned, there is a demand growth which is coming from lithium carbonate business, there's demand growth which is coming from solar glass. These are all driving demand strongly, which is leading to a situation where I think even if, including us, we're also putting steel and cement on the ground as fast as we can. But I think it is going to take time for people to bring substantial numbers on the ground. It is just a gestation period. I think you just have to live with the situation we are today.
So basically that 61 to 71 gap into capacity, that capacity is not going to come back. You're saying we need new investments, and that is why we believe the supply shortage will continue.
Yeah. So I think let's just go through these numbers carefully. And I think very, you can correct me. 71 is nameplate, and demand is at about 61, and the real capacity which is available today is about 58, accounting for shutdowns and mothballed capacity, everything put together. So that is leading to about 3 million ton shortfall. That should give you the equation.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sarvesh Gupta from Maximal Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Good afternoon, sir, and thanks a lot for taking my question. Sir, first question is, during the pandemic, one more thing which happened specifically for your India soda ash business is, I think the imports were severely impacted because of variety of logistics challenges, etc. Now, while we understand the global supply-demand impacts, But you know, now as we open up and things are getting normalized, what can be the impact of the imports coming back into the Indian markets and the impact on the realization and the demand supply situation for the Indian business, soda ash?
The issue really is on both the shipping availability and shipping cost. As the shipping cost of imports keeps increasing and it is stayed at elevated levels, I think it gives us a natural hedge and protection for the domestic pricing to hold up. So I think that is one element. Second is, I think fundamentally, because of the COVID restrictions, the port operations are not really fully back to normal. Trucking availability has been a big issue in many, many countries. So these are all leading to supply chain bottlenecks, and we don't see shipping lines coming into a situation where they're saying that there's going to be surplus of containers available or there's going to be surplus of bulk cargo available. I think this is really the issue, which is cost elevated levels, and that adds the cost of import which domestic producers don't face.
Understood. And in the other question, which is more at the macro level, is, you know, while there is a 3 million ton shortage that you alluded to, but at the same time, you know, because of interest rate increase concerns, etc., there can be a situation wherein housing, especially the incremental new housing which will get built, can get impacted. So do you see that as a possible threat on a global demand level, both for your US as well as India business, because that has been on a boom and there are obvious concerns on the incremental situation? And if you can also sort of give some color on how much housing is important for your business in US and India.
Yeah, I think fundamentally, let's look at the segments in their own. So there's one segment which is neither container glass nor flat glass. That segment which is detergents, which is other chemicals. I think from soda ash is used in making other chemicals. That is steadily rising. And there are new applications which have come, which is your solar glass, which I think the world is switching to more and more renewable, and lithium carbonate. Both need soda ash. 1 ton of lithium carbonate needs almost a ton of soda ash. I think that really is driving the new demand. Now, coming to traditional demand, the switch away from plastics to more sustainable glass containers and glass bottles, and these are all thin-walled glass bottles which have very good strength and all that. I think those are driving the demand on the container glass segment. We don't see that reducing. In fact, we see the in-home consumption as it continues to hold up. Even post-pandemic, we would continue to see very good demand in that segment. I think at least that's what our customers are saying. The second element is about the flat glass. I think there are two drivers here. One is the infrastructure and the commercial flat glass. And the second one is the housing flat glass. And the third element is the automotive flat glass. I think automotive demand has been bit constrained, and I think our demand from automotive side is constrained not so much because there is no end consumer demand. Most of the automakers are telling us that the need for private transport and safety of private transport has increased, but they are not able to produce because of shortage of various other inputs like chips and other elements. As these things ease up, I think the glass demand which is going into automotive will creep up. Now, coming to infrastructure, I think most countries are upgrading their infrastructure after a long time gap. You saw the infrastructure bill come in US, which is going to sort of look at not just roads, which is also going to look at airports, which is going to look at all the public spaces, and all of them will have a huge amount of demand for glass. And on top of that, I think residential housing restarts, both in affordable housing area in developing markets and housing what I call housing recycling in many markets into suburban living, because right now what has happened, work from home and all these have moved this to larger houses and shifting into more open spaces. I think there also, again, if you see the news coming out of developed markets, the housing demand actually has picked up faster than anybody has anticipated. So all in all, I would say that one segment of the market was anyway holding up right through the pandemic, which is the non glass, non-new, let's say, segment. And then container glass anyway is growing as per the push towards sustainability. Then new applications are coming in, which is in the solar glass and lithium carbonate. And the good news is we believe that the auto sector will go, get back to its growth story once the current shortage of things like chips is tied over that. And lastly, I think housing certainly is growing in the developing markets, but in the area of developed markets again, we are most people are saying it's positive move. So this is what we are hearing from our customers. We have no better knowledge about this than anybody else. I can only tell you that we hear our customers closely and strongly and plan our future, which is why we are also planning to further expand our facilities in India, and we will come back with specific plans as soon as they are cleared. As of now, the execution of the current plan, which was 2,600 crore, is on schedule. That's all I will comment. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Do you have any idea about housing? What is the end user demand by housing?
We will come back with sectoral demand patterns in the next meeting. We certainly have the data, but we will give it to you.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chintan Modi from Haitong Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much. So can you tell us what would be the size of demand for soda ash in this new applications like solar and battery materials?
Yeah, so our estimate is that for lithium carbonate, it could be anywhere moving up to close to 750,000 tons per annum, so that's the one, over the next year or two. And for solar glass, it's going to be much, much higher, maybe close to a million and a half tons additional demand just coming out of solar, primarily in markets like China, etc., which is one of the reasons why I think Chinese exports have come down. They are focusing more now on supplying the large uptick in demand that's happened in domestic Chinese market itself.
Okay. So it is about 3% currently of the total demand.
That's right. Also growth rates there are in double digits.
Double digits. And does this require specific grades of soda ash? And is there any significant difference in the pricing today?
No, not really. The grade of soda ash is the same.
Okay, and are we able to map like how much would these new applications contribute for us in the soda ash and any kind of growth rates that you would like to share?
Yeah, I think we have a direct linkage to the lithium carbonate operations in South America. So certainly it is going from our plant, US facility. And as far as the solar glass is concerned, as the solar glass projects in India take off, we will be certainly supporting them. It's an opportunity. As of now, there is only just one solar glass facility in India.
But could you share some rough contribution number? How much would be contributing to our volumes?
Oh, in terms of segment exposure, we will come out with broad segment exposure next time as we come out with overall market exposure.
Yeah. Sure. And lastly, for the silica and prebiotics, we were expected to get some, you know, customer qualifications. So has that happened and what is the kind of traction that you are seeing over there?
Yeah, I think on silica, we've got one tire customer qualification. We are expecting two more. And on NPS, I think we've got international qualification from markets like Korea, but we are still expecting some clearances from European customers. Still pending.
Okay. Can we expect like, you know, this business to kind of double in say next 2 to 3 years for us?
Yeah, I think we are seeing some positive news and positive push coming in the area of silica. So certainly we are working on internal plans. So we will come back to you as soon as those internal plans are clear. On nutraceutical, I think it is a bit of a, we need to still establish our product in the marketplace before we can comment. But I think silica will move a little bit faster.
Sure. Thank you, sir. That was it.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dhavan Shah from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, sir. So I have a question on the UK business. So can you please share the realization growth we have taken for the UK business this quarter? And given that there is a trend of input price inflation this quarter as well, and this UK and US both are long-term calendar contracts. So by what quantum do you foresee that if there will be any input price inflation going ahead, we can be at break even, and beyond that we can have some operational impact on that thing? If you can share thoughts on this.
So I will add a broad color. I think the current structure of contracting we've done in both these markets allows us beyond certain cutoffs to have a full pass-through of the cost. And I think that puts us in a fairly, stable situation than what we had experienced in the quarter two. So I think I will stop there, because I think that's what we've negotiated with customers, and customers are fairly supportive of this shift.
Okay. And can you please share the realization growth for UK? I mean, $30-$40 per ton was for US. So what was the realization growth in UK business this quarter? Or maybe it can be sustainable going ahead?
Yeah, yeah. I think across markets, the range is about the same. I think you can use the number we gave for the US exports.
Okay, okay. And you mentioned that there could be around 3 million ton kind of the shortage between this demand supply of soda ash. So given that, if the after Winter Olympics, do you foresee that given that China is currently the net importer, but it can, the imports from China can get reduced, and then that can give us comfort in terms of the demand supply situation?
Actually, the reverse is true. What has happened is, because of New Year holiday and the Chinese New Year holiday and the issue related to Olympics, some of the customer consuming industries had slowed down during this period. In fact, the price had slightly come off in China during this period. We expect once the Olympics and the season is over, the consuming sector's Chinese demand to pick up, and the pricing to go back to the firm levels which were there before. So really, the phenomenon which you explained affected our consuming entities in China. So we expect that demand to go back to normal.
Okay. And lastly, on the US business, you mentioned that there is a lower realization and the margins in the export business. But if I look at, the QOQ business, QOQ-wise, so there's been a drop in the export business, export volume for US. But still, the margins have also been reduced on QOQ. For US. So is that largely because of the higher gas prices, or?
Yeah, the main issue in India and Kenya and the US, I wanted to say that because of the shutdown which we had taken, I think each plant at a different level of lower production. You could take anywhere between 20,000 and some plants 10,000 tons of lesser production. That has led to lower fixed cost absorption and margin reduction, and also that also has impacted some of the when you take the shutdown, it is not as if the power plant is stopped; it continues to run. So the variable cost continues to be incurred, and that puts pressure on margin. So that would be the broad issue if you go Q2 to Q3.
Sure. Yeah, that's all from my side. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bharat Sheth from Quest Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, just want to one small clarification that in US last quarter we stated that we have renegotiated contract for pass through after certain this thing. So that is still is in place, and over and above whatever price increase that we have taken, is that correct understanding?
No, there were some export markets, I think, in the last quarter, especially in Southeast Asia, where contracts were on a quarterly basis. So those came up for renegotiation at that point in time. But currently, as we go into the new year, most of the pricing is being set at the new level. So you would have seen an uptick in those prices as well.
You will see.
You will see, sorry. You will see as we view the results coming in for Q4 and moving forward.
Yeah, and on those prices, if there is any movement, input cost shift, which is substantial, above a cutoff, in, especially in UK, I think we are protected.
And second, we lost some production because of shutdown as well as supply chain issue. So is it, can you give some broad number, how much was due to shutdown and how much due to supply chain issue?
Yeah, broadly the production shortfall, you will not see it in sales, so the production shortfall was about 30,000 tons across all units put together.
How much was on account of shutdown and how much on supply chain issue?
No, no, it was only on shutdown. So we didn't use anything on, we have stocked up our units well, so we are well protected on input side.
And when our India expansion will be on the stream?
India expansion is coming in steps, and I think fully it will get on stream by end of 23 or so, all the units.
Okay, and last question, sir. On the specialty side, we had guided to break even in Q4. So are we still on the same or there is some deferment?
I think we will come back. I think we are working hard to still get to that point.
Okay. Thank you and all the best, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Omkar Kamtekar from Amara Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Sir, before I have two small questions. Before that, a small clarification. The approximately 2 tons of sodium carbonate is required for the production of 1 ton of lithium carbonate. Is that correct, sir? Okay. So the first question is, sir, from the energy business vertical. So, sir, what type of battery type are we focusing on? Are we focusing on vehicles, electric vehicle batteries, or energy storage batteries for the larger grid?
I think, as I mentioned, no specific decision has been taken. If there's any decision, we'll come back to you. That's all it is there to say.
Okay, okay. And second small question is regarding the battery that we will be manufacturing. So we would be acting as a supplier for the battery manufacturer, or we would be in-house manufacturing a battery for vehicles or the grid?
So when I mentioned no decision be taken, I cannot comment
on it. Okay. Yeah? Okay, no issues. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Mithil, an investor. Please go ahead.
Hello.
So please proceed with your question.
Yeah, on the accounting side, I had a couple of questions. There was some hedging done on the accounting side for gas. So if you can just highlight on that.
Yeah, if you look at accounting side, Mithil, on the other comprehensive income line in the console, you will find the gain coming over there. So the bulk of the gas positions have been hedged in UK and the US, and that gain comes in your other comprehensive income line in the P&L.
Yeah. So can you just briefly, share the prices at which we are hedging, or how it is?
So we have a policy we go by, Mithil, in terms of the hedging policy, and we go as per that and hedge as per the forecast of what we're going to buy in gas in future. And that's why, since the price of hedging was lower than the market has gone up, therefore you have a mark-to-market gain sitting in the OCI.
Okay. So any particular gas price you can share wherein we are safe actually? So about that price,
so we've been hedging for the last couple of years, Mithil. Therefore, our hedging has been consistently happening month on month. So it's based upon the past averages. But the price has gone up in the last 9 months' time. So that's why it's the makhlab gain. But exactly sharing in terms of what price we're hedging is obviously lower than what the current markets are. Markets have gone up substantially.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for taking this.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Saket Kapoor from Kapoor Company. Please go ahead.
Namaskar, sir, and thank you for the opportunity. Sir, earlier in the last call, by the end of, I think so, September, October, we have taken price hike to the tune of 7,000 rupees in the domestic market. Any revision that we have taken for this quarter, sir, for the spot prices?
So as I mentioned earlier, 1st February onwards, we've increased the spreads further by about 1500 rupees.
So didn't get to come again, please?
Sorry, from the 1st of February onwards, we have increased our list price by 1500 rupees a ton.
Okay. So for this month, we have taken a fresh hike of 1500 rupees.
That's right.
Right, sir. And sir, for the domestic operations, sir, how much is the fixed price contract and what are we selling on spot, sir? Or are there a price revision clause for it?
Yeah, we have a mix of some customers who are on a quarterly reset. There are some customers who work monthly. And of course, there is some volume that goes, you know, literally on price ruling on date of dispatch, and we try to maintain a mix of those. As I mentioned earlier, really the focus both for us and our customers moving forward into the year is to make sure that we keep them supplied, that they feel secure in terms of their availability of soda ash.
Sir, this price hike of 1500 rupees which we have taken off late, is it pertaining to again the energy cost or the demand supply that has resulted in it?
It's very difficult to break up the two, but certainly the two broad drivers are the demand supply and the market dynamics, and of course on input costs. But to break that up would be, you know.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chintan Modi from Haitong Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for the follow-up. So just one question. This price hike that, as you mentioned, that could be a combination of both cost inflation as well as the demand supply mismatch that we are seeing. Let's assume that a few quarters later, when this cost inflation starts subsiding and, you know, it's at a much lower level compared to like earlier was, do you believe that customers will ask for a price reduction in soda ash, or considering the demand supply mismatch, you'll be able to sustain those prices and increase your margins?
See, really speaking, Chintan, I want to tell you that the inflation has been mainly on the energy side. I think while I did mention salt availability or unavailability and all, I think those prices will correct, but they don't move the needle so much. The needle is moved by energy price. And the second needle as far as UK is concerned is the carbon price. So on carbon, certainly we are intending to make sure if carbon prices do come down, which we, you see, carbon price normally was ruling at about 20, 25 euros, and it had moved up to 60, 65, now right now it is around 90 to 100. So we don't anticipate it coming below 70 in any case, but if it does come down, it's a pass-through, that's what we will maintain as far as customers are concerned. When it comes to the energy fees, I think, again, while we all hope that the energy costs stabilize, actually the needle is moving in the other direction. So if you ask me in the short term, in the next 12 months, I don't see any respite on the energy side, because if the world is bouncing back, there are pressure on coal mines from reopening. There are power plants which need to restart, and I think they're all having this having to scramble for input. And on gas side, I think, the current situation in Europe and worldwide is not helping us in many ways. So, I wish it would move, but I would not want to hazard a guess. Unless it moves substantially on the softening side on the energy, I don't expect anyone to come back, because this seems to be the new normal we've settled into, at least for next 1 year or so.
Okay. Sure, sir. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of S. Ramesh from Nirmal Bang. Please go ahead.
Thank you once again. If you go back to the UK business, if you look at the operating cost as of the third quarter, do we see that moving up in line with the current inflation for the fourth quarter and the full year? And how do we see the EBITDA margins trending in terms of percentage terms, say, in fourth quarter and over the next 1 year, UK?
Ramesh, just repeat the question. Amish?
Yeah, basically going back to the UK business, we just think because if you see the pattern in UK, we don't have a consistent trend in margin. So if you look at the margins and the cost structure in the third quarter, what is the potential for the annual increase in the cost there in the percentage terms, and what is the kind of movement we can expect in the percentage margin in UK over the, say, the next two quarters?
See, Ramesh, if you look at the first half numbers for UK, there was a substantial hit because of the carbon. As I mentioned earlier, we were able to hedge carbon only from October onwards. There was no market to hedge. So therefore, the first half of the year had a substantial hit because of the carbon impact in H1. Now that, as you mentioned, is not being covered by way of a hedge from Q3 onwards. And therefore, the volatility because of the carbon may not be there going forward. And also, with the pass-through happening of the carbon price to customers, you'll see less volatility in the UK numbers is what we are presuming going forward. But first half had volatility because of the impact of the carbon and some part of the other input cost, and a lag between the input cost going up and the cost increase being passed through.
So how much is the increase in the UK EBITDA as a result of the MTM gains you have shown in other comprehensive income?
So whatever in UK, the hedging is done by way of a forward purchase contract, Ramesh. It's not a hedge in the normal sense of a hedge. What you see in the OCI is in terms of the gas hedge taken in, only the gas hedge taken in the UK and US. The carbon is bought through a forward purchase contract, which is not mark to market.
No, so is there any element of that MTM gain in the UK EBITDA, or is it all operating gain?
No, what I was explaining is that in the Q3, since we've been able to hedge the carbon at the by way of forward purchase agreement here, there is no incremental hit in Q3 on carbon.
Okay. So that means our overall, so to that extent, is the EBITDA is representative of the normalized operating EBITDA that you can expect?
More or less. That is your question. I think that is correct. It is likely to remain in that bound.
Yeah, understood. Thanks a lot. That was helpful.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for the day. I now hand the conference back to the management for closing comments. Over to you.
Thank you very much. I want to thank everyone who's on the call and for your questions and your suggestions. I just want to say that we went through a very difficult period in Q2, and I think the team has worked well to bounce back with the help of working with the customers, working with our suppliers to ensure a steady bounce back in Q3. I think we hope that the current situation which we have in terms of our engagement with customers and our current structure of engaging with our suppliers should hold us steady going forward into not just Q4 but also well into next year. As far as the strategy is concerned, the strategy is to expand the core aggressively, and I think the investment plan in India for about 2,600 crore is coming on stream, and we expect most of it should be done and invested by the year end, the coming year end. And going forward, we also are looking at further plans for expansion, which we will come back to all of you as and when they are cleared by the board. And as far as international business are concerned, commercial terms, renegotiation of the customers has made them more steady. They were very volatile. I fully agree with many of the comments, but they become steady. And we hope to hold this steady performance going forward across all our units. Overall, I would say the demand-supply environment continues to be tight, and the supply-side challenges have been met well by the team by ensuring adequate stocking, adequate risk mitigation there on the input side, and really it is up to operating excellence and excellence in servicing our customers, which our team is focused on, which will continue to come back to you. Thank you, and wish you all well.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Tata Chemicals, that concludes this conference. We thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.